This is Movies, a podcast for the active cinema. And with me today, of course, it's my co-host Hans. And as a boy, the other children used to call him Abe Lincoln because he never told a lie.
Jesus, that's an old one. Did you pull that from like episode, I don't know, 40 or something? Or from,
that was in Mass Day Lottery. That was not even, that was not part of the show. Yeah.
There's going to be like 100 different cuts of Mass State Lottery, of just different cuts that you've done, different scenes and audios. And
what we should have done is what they did with Dracula on the wall over there, is we should have done a Spanish language one. We shot side by side with the English version.
So you shoot one scene in Spanish and then you shoot it again in English?
That's right. That's what they did. But they had different actors for Dracula. For Mass Day, we could have just used you for every scene.
For all the dialogue, for every scene.
You could feed us lines.
Yeah.
So
I mean, just do that Will Ferrell. Didn't he do that with that Casa de Mi Padre, I think it was?
Yeah, but nobody saw that in Spanish. Nobody watched that movie.
I saw
it. We could get away with it. You know, speaking of Spain, Spain went through a civil war not that long ago, I think.
Segue. Yeah.
We're talking about Alex Garland's Civil War, a new 2024 picture. Starring...
You know, that thing that Spain is known for, the Civil War, no other country. Why Spain? Why did you pull Spain? All right.
Well, yeah. This movie is causing quite the buzz on social media, and the critics just cannot get enough of this Civil War movie. They love it. It's got 83% positive on Rotten Tomatoes right now. I'm sure it's going to do well at the box office. It's made for IMAX. Were you excited going into this movie?
I'm trying to think what would have looked better in IMAX, of what scene or what, and I can't.
All the gunfights, all the war stuff, maybe?
Seems a bit. Seems like a unnecessary use of the technology for something like this.
Well, I think less so than Oppenheimer, where you're just shooting Cillian Murphy in a bed.
Yeah, there's some type of intensity that that movie has that this one doesn't, you know? So even the tense scenes were more tense than whatever Kirsten Dunst was pretending to do here.
I suppose. Man, she looks weathered these days. She looks very tired.
She looks like what she would look like if she was a waitress instead of an actress. You know, like if she was a waitress instead of having an acting career, that's what she would look like at that age, whatever she is, like 40 something.
She's not 40 something. She's like 35.
No, she's not.
Yeah, she is. What? She's young. She's not as old as you would think. I don't think she's 40.
41.
Yet. No, she ain't 41. No, Google's lying. She's 32.
All right. Which is what movie was your introduction to her? Spider-Man, I'm sure, right?
No, I think I might have seen something with her as a kid. I didn't watch Interview with a Vampire when I was young. Actually, I did.
That would be.
Actually, I think it was family movie night, and that was the pick from the video store one time. So maybe that was it, but I didn't consciously know it was her. So I guess probably Spider-Man or Bring It On.
Yeah. So would it be Virgin Suicides or Dick? Do you see Dick? Do you remember that movie?
I remember the movie, but I never watched it.
Fall in Love with Richard Nixon or something?
I don't know.
Yeah. Secret Advice or something. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, she looks rough, I'm sure. I mean, it's on purpose, obviously, because she's supposed to be...
Well, yeah, she's a conflict journalist. She's experienced conflicts time and time. She's Jake Hanrahan. She plays Jake Hanrahan in this movie.
Yeah. And she has a little sidekick there that wants to be her. And she
keeps
talking about how she wants to be her throughout the movie.
Kaylee Spenny, who I did not know, played Priscilla in Priscilla. She seems like a child here. And in that movie, she seems... less so like a child. So you haven't seen it. It's not really, DC will tell you it's the best movie ever made. I think it was really unremarkable. So.
Just like Civil War. No, what is this movie called? Civil War?
Marvel presents Civil War.
Alex Garland, Captain American Civil War. What was your, because you gave it 3 stars, I gave it 2.
I might walk that back a little bit, but not that much.
Okay. Because I listened to a couple of reviews before the episode. I listened to two of your favorites, Jeremy Johns and Chris Stuckman. And they both liked it.
Of course.
But they both have a criticism that's similar to mine, which is, well, no, actually, I think their biggest issue that they had was that the movie doesn't take a position, which I don't have an issue with. Like, that's not, I thought that it would, because obviously in the climate that we're currently living in, like, it's impossible.
I think it does. I think it does take a position. And it's, here's the thing, by building the form of the movie to ultimately defer to like cookie dough liberalism, you're taking a side. And he clearly positions it in a way where there's four factions, right? But it's very obviously, it's like you have Proud Boy types in the South, and then you have the communists over here, and that's what the conflict is. So it's pretty similar to what we have going on right now, which is intentional. And Nick Offerman is clearly a Trump surrogate. I don't see how it doesn't take a position in its base. Maybe when you watch the movie, it is less trying to guide you to be like, these are the good guys, these are the bad guys. But any good artist is not necessarily going to walk you to that conclusion in a way that's going to be obvious. So I don't agree with that. I don't think this is an apolitical film, which I voiced to you as I was watching the movie. People were like, oh, this is apolitical. Yeah. It's the farthest thing from apolitical. But
maybe it's not preachy or as preachy as we expected it to be.
Sure.
Maybe.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I would absolutely agree with that. I don't think it's preachy at all, but I think it feels a sense of loyalty to one position more than the other.
Well, because one position is presented as cartoonish, right? It's presented as extreme.
I don't know if it's, look at how I wouldn't use the word cartoonish so much as there are far less redeeming values to the characters on the more right-wing spectrum that are fighting in the battle. The most positive you get are, what, the gas station guys who aren't positive at all? They don't want to give them gas. They don't want to help them. They don't have any interest in and they're stringing up people. You see a lot of gratuitous violence, I think. You see it anyway. They mention it from the other faction. I know there's an Antifa massacre that's mentioned. You don't know if it's Antifa who committed a massacre or Antifa who was massacred, you know. Yeah. But you see a lot of the violence on the right-wing side. You see the bodies. You see people strung up. You see people in a ditch. Well, that's intentional. That's trying to say, spooky, scary, stay away from these guys. And then Jesse Plemons comes in and steals the movie, makes the movie for the 5 to 10 minutes he's on screen. It's the best. It reminded me of Breaking Bad when he played Todd. It's just pure intensity. It's like, wow, this guy's too good for this movie. But there's never a moment where, and the premise of, it's the president. The president is seeking a third term, an unconstitutional third term. Well, we know that the president is on the side of the right-wing people, and you cast Nick Offerman, who's Mr. America on Parks and Rec, even if he's a fairy in his personal life.
Yeah.
That's clearly coded in a certain way.
Is the, what was it from that show in the 70s? Oh, in the fam? No, it's not. Was it All in the Family? Where the character was very racist and very homophobic.
Archie
Bunker,
yeah.
Archie, yeah. But then the actor was like a huge liberal. Yeah, I guess I didn't mind the fact that he didn't show, because I honestly went in blind. I didn't know what I was supposed to expect from this. I saw the trailer, didn't really get much from it. And then I saw the reaction to it, which is what we were talking about on the Dune episode. Or that we will talk about in the future Dune episode. I don't know what order you're going to release them. I don't mind that they didn't show how it started or how it ended. I didn't know that the story was supposed to be kind of like a day in the life of a journalist that goes there and like this happens. And it's kind of just, it's more to show you what would happen, I guess, if this was to happen. But I honestly didn't feel any type of major threat more that you would feel in like an episode of The Walking Dead, where there's personal drama between the characters that's obviously not as important as what's happening outside of their personal drama, but the personal drama is kind of what drives the thing. And then there's that, you know, overarching story on top of it. It kind of felt like that here, because even though they did show some of the violence and they did show some of the like war thing happening, you were still focusing on this journalist trying to like get from one place to the other. So at the end of the day, I don't know if the movie really accomplishes anything other than try to fearmonger with something that felt very PG to me because of that, because of the content that has been released in the past 30 years, where something like a Call of Duty game feels more threatening than this movie. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like if you're trying to fearmonger about what could happen, you need to push the envelope, because I mean, we're in 2024 and the news would show you more horrible shit that you see in this movie. So for it to make a mark on me, or for it to like work on what it's trying to do, which is fear monger apparently, or that's what I got from it, it just kind of feels like it's your uncle's politics movie, you know what I mean? Like, very, it doesn't go far in any kind of way, so it just kind of lingers there in the middle throughout.
Before we get back to the show, I want to encourage you to visit patreon.com/lowres and sign up for our $5 tier right now. We have video installments of every episode of Movies and B-Bang you listen to on Spotify and Apple Podcasts weeks before they go out, and bonus shows you won't find anywhere else. We also have our ultra-exclusive $100 tier, which allows you to select one movie we'll watch for our program Movies, a podcast by The Act of Cinema. We typically have an eclectic mix of films that we usually cover, but you can make it as obscure or as mainstream as it gets. And yes, I will take pleasure in the fact that Hans will have to endure a whole viewing of your movie without napping. So head on over to patreon.com/lowres and sign up today. I think comparing it to The Walking Dead is spot on. It does feel like that, where they're venturing through, oh, we have to go to the east, we have to go to the south, we're doing this, we're trying to get the interview with the president. And I felt none of these characters were especially likable. The most likable might be Stephen McKinley Henderson as Sammy. He was the older, light-skinned black guy. That's about it. That's about the only likable character in this bunch. The one I found particularly repellent was this character, Joel, who's the Latin American journalist. And boy, is he whiny. He is such a crying whiner who cannot handle his... like Kirsten Dunst's character, Lee, is essentially, in any sort of personality type, the... like standard male protagonist prototype you'd see from the 1980s and 90s, just very stoic, contained, not going to get emotional in any given situation. And then you have this Joel character who is just a total bitch and the exact opposite of that. And he's crying tears and he's freaking out and he just cannot handle himself. I wanted him to die so bad. And the fact that he is one of the only two survivors in this movie really, and he gets the moment where he's like, give me a quote, hold on, don't kill the ending of this movie is pretty wild, where he wants the quote.
So, oh, go on. Yeah,
the fact that he has that moment is kind of sickening.
There's also that scene that, well, I don't know if it stood up for you, but it took me out of whatever little I was into the movie. I hate when movies do this, which is that whenever the main characters that you've been following for a while go into a place that they've been before. So like in this case, I don't know if it's their base, but like they've been there before. And when they get there, this, what is the character's name? The Latino guy? Joey? No.
Joel.
Joel. He sees kids jumping rope and he's like, oh, I'm gonna go show them. And then he goes and like jumps rope with them, and then he's like, this kid's. And the purpose of that is to show you that, hey, aren't I comfortable with them, even though these are NPC characters that are not going to say anything, but this is how I'm showing you that I've been here before, and look at how comfortable I am with them. But instead of that, because he's interacting with characters that can't talk back, because if you talk back, they have to pay you more as an actor, so they're not going to talk back to you, so you can't really interact with them. They're just kind of there. And he tries to act normal with them because he's supposed to show that he's familiar with them. But because they can't interact back, then it just sticks out to me as like, oh, actor acting. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like, oh, why do you have to convince anyone that you're familiar with these people that you've been with before and that you've jump rope with before? Why are you trying to convince the audience, which is what this is doing? Like, if this is the first time that you're here, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like that always takes me out of it whenever they do that shit, because it's just like, you don't have to, just have them be regular and natural with them, or pay the actors a little bit more and allow them to talk back to them so that it's more normal than just them just staring at the actor guy. And then it's just like, oh, he did the thing, oh, he showed us, but we can't even giggle or anything, because if we speak, we need more money.
Or you get AI actors, you just put in AI children, and you get the AI voice as well, and then that, yeah, there you go, problem solved.
Yeah, that really bothered me at that point. And it might just be my autism that focuses on things like that, but I hate when they do shit like that, because like, it's not necessary. We're in a scene where, don't take me out of it by showing me something that why would he do that? It's not the first time they're there, so why would they act weird about the one thing that's happening that always happens, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's one of those script things, I guess, that kind of you don't think about really, but then you see it on screen and you're just,
I would be
like,
so
why?
Curious to read the script to this movie whenever it was written, because it had to have been written probably around like 2016 to 2020, you would think. Yeah. And then they probably, it sat for a bit, and then maybe he started to scale back like the more overt points and tried to make it a bit more subtle. So let's break down the four factions in this movie. I have it pulled up right here on the page. We have, the premise of the film is that you're following four conflict reporters going across the country to try and get an interview with the president, who is not named. As far as I know, I don't believe they ever give a name to this president character. The idea is that he did an unconstitutional third term, which has been done before in America. They actually cemented it as a rule. You could not do it after Franklin Delano Roosevelt won a fourth term as president. He's the only president in the history of the country to serve more than two terms for now. The four factions are the dictatorship's loyalist states. And do they break down what he has done that is in vain of a dictator?
Nope.
Aside from the third term. Okay. All right. So we're just going to, and look, even if Biden decided at 95, I'm doing term number five, I don't know if I would call him a dictator at that point.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things with this movie, right? It doesn't really break much down. It just kind of expects you to just jump into this world and then...
I think that's a good thing more than happening. A bad thing. Because if they were to break it down in detail, there are going to be things that somebody like Alex Garland, who I've referred to as a surface level thinker frequently, it's going to mirror reality and it's going to spell out what he's trying to do with the movie or what the purpose there is of it. And I do think there's been conversations about, is this predictive programming? Is this to condition people to warm up to this idea of civil war or maybe some of the things in this movie? And I don't ever buy that flat, but there's definitely things in the air. And maybe it's this unconscious, collective unconscious thing where as of like 2016, that's when civil war started popping up in the media, like the Captain America film. And then they're doing Civil War II, the book. And then you start seeing it in all these different forms. And then it dies down a bit. And now the election is happening yet again. And it looks like, well, Trump might win again. Maybe. Civil War the movie, new Civil War movie comes out. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe there is something to it. There's absolutely evidence of the CIA and government groups funding certain projects or saying like, hey, we need something. Or like, for example, the X-Files. The X-Files creator, I believe his name was Chris Carter, had been contacted by government agencies more than once to drop things into the show that would be reflective of future things that they would be doing, things that would be happening. This is a fact. So yeah. It's not out of the realm of possibility that they would hit up one of the most prospective directors or something, or A24, and be like, what do we got that's in vain of this? Okay, dude, here's a little money. Could you just add this one thing in the script? Just this, you know, but who knows what that would be. Now that I've taken this excursion away from what I was originally setting out to do, the four factions, the dictatorships, loyalist states, and that seems to be the majority of the country. It's the entire East Coast and a good chunk of the Midwest and some of the West. Then you have the Florida Alliance. And the Florida Alliance, I guess, is like the January 6th crowd. Yeah, it's the people mm-hmm. who stormed the Capitol. Jesse Plemons yeah. and company, Boogaloo Boys, Proud Boys.
Flag wearing mm-hmm. Americans, yeah.
Then you have the Western Forces. And I think what the Western Forces, and that's California and Texas, I think that's really just sort of the people who every couple of years in Texas go, we're going to have, you know, we're going to remove ourselves from the country. We're going to be our own mm-hmm. country. And that's not really necessarily a strong political bend in one direction or another, but I suppose it's probably more libertarian, closer to right wing yeah. than not, you know? And then what's the left wing faction? It's the New People's Army, which is centrally located in the Portland, Washington, soy whore community area of the United States.
The ones that have no weapons.
No, everybody had weapons. Mm-hmm. Who didn't have weapons?
I don't know why I went into a trip of like what they would be as opposed to what you're talking about, which is the movie.
Well, even in reality, the people who show up to these rallies and the riots and fight, they still bring weapons. They don't necessarily. Actually, some of them do bring guns.
Yeah, but didn't that thing people in Seattle die when they did that little small town inside of the city and then bunch of people died mm-hmm. to get rid of it, remember?
Yes, right after damn. COVID, what was that during? Called? I remember there was like a black SoundCloud rapper who was in charge of it.
It was called the...
Damn, it's right on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chaz? Something on... Chaz, yes. Chaz, was it something, yeah. Something autonomous zone.
Yeah.
What a failed state and experiment.
So... let's say that we're taking the government gave Alex Garland some things to prepare America or to get into their head the idea of a civil war. Do you think this movie accomplishes anything when it comes to scaring anyone or making it look like it wouldn't be... What am I trying to ask? Because if the goal is to scare people, I don't think this works because, again, I don't think it pushed enough the envelope to be scary, especially from the content that we consume daily. Mm-hmm. And if it's trying to get anyone excited about maybe having something like that...
Pause real quick. You think that the goal... let's say we're going to go with the conspiracy angle of it, of the government maybe did... fan the flames of this movie to for some purpose. You think that purpose would be de-escalation?
No, not at all. Because that's not good for them. You know,
you think I don't know if a civil war would be good for them.
Well, the government doesn't want you to get along with your neighbor because then you, instead of fighting with them, then you pay attention to what the government is doing. So they want you to be busy with everything else so that you don't pay attention to what they do. And then you vote for them over and over again and nothing gets better.
But I think that there's a difference between causing friction that is everlasting and driving things to war, because if you drive things to war, then some powerful people will die. Some powerful people, at the very least, will wind up in prison.
Yeah, but remember how media played the Summer of Love that happened a couple of years ago, where all they did was to make things worse instead of trying to make anything better? And I'm sure that it wasn't just, well, CNN decided to do this today. You know, that's coming from the top, because they were all saying the same thing. So it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know. I feel like as long as you're not touching them, then they don't give a shit. You know, look at COVID. Are we even allowed to say that word still here on YouTube? I don't even know. But look at everything that happened there. Like, was that for the people? Did they care that anyone died, actually, you know, died, or did it care, you know, the damage that it caused anyone? No, because they got rich. So,
but here's the thing.
I'm kind of like not surprised. Yeah, go on.
The people in charge would still have to, it would be adding more work to what they have to do, because suddenly they would be in charge of different factions, and then one faction is going to pay an ultimate price at the end of the day. So I don't think it would be to their benefit to do that. I think the ideal would be total submission, the way that what they got during COVID, where everyone was just panicked and scared. And all right, yeah, you want us to get the vax four times? You want us to put our loved ones in these homes with a bunch of sick people? Okay, we'll do that. We'll play that game because I don't want to die.
But I think that might be more difficult to pull off than dividing people, because now, or I don't know, I feel like there's so many people that are unfulfilled with their lives that it's easier to get someone to fight someone that to get them to help someone. And by painting your neighbor as like bad, or like anyone that thinks differently than you as bad, it takes attention away from them. So I think, I don't know. I obviously, you know, if it gets to the point of a civil war, yeah, some leaders are gonna die, but they also have enough money where they can just leave the country. And also, aren't there a bunch of powerful people just building security bunkers in the States too, like preparing for something like this to happen, right? So I don't know. I feel like if anything like this was to happen, the only people that would suffer were regular people. You know, I don't think it would get up to them. And if it does, then that will be the end of it. And if they want to keep it going, would they even give a like, would they even care? Would they just be like, yeah, just let them kill themselves and we can still get our keep our shit going. We're pretending that we're fighting against each other or whatever, but let them fight. And we'll keep the, just like what they do in Congress, you know, where it's like, we're going to vote against what they, whatever. And then the other side is like, we're going to vote against the other side. And then you see the vote and everyone's voting for the same thing.
No, together. I don't think it would be the same thing at all. If you're bringing things to an actual war, then all that goes out the window. There's not going to be any cohesive sense of like, hey, we're all American anymore. It's going to be, I mean, what their thing would be is, we have to kill Trump. We have to make sure that Trump is dead. Rudy Giuliani will be strung up in Times Square by his neck. Let's make an example of this man. You know, they're going to be out for blood for certain. And whatever new rules are in place, like if God, I mean, I don't see that sort of thing happening if Biden wins again in November. If Biden wins again in November, then it's just another 4 years of, hey, you're paying $10 for beef jerky now. You're paying $20 in 4 years.
Are you saying
$40 for beef jerky? It's always been like this. It's always been normal to pay $40 for beef jerky. But if Trump wins, that's a real possibility. Because
saying that liberals are braver than conservatives when it comes to causing shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, we saw it. We saw it very recently, right? The George Floyd thing, where it was just like, this is just a mom and pop store. And they're like, fuck it. Who gives a shit? Fuck you.
Yeah. Whoever has unwavering confidence that they are morally right and good has the advantage. And you see this not just with American conflict, but take a look at, and I'm not trying to stoke any flames here, but just take a look at any Islamic conflict. They don't ever doubt that what they're doing is just or for the best, no matter how barbaric it might be. there's never a moment of self-reflection that goes, hey, what am I doing cutting this guy's head off right now? No, they're doing it for their God and for their people, because they've been fucking scorched by the West.
The victim has that thing, right? If you think of yourself as a victim, then you justify all of your actions because you're the victim. Even if you're not, if you've convinced yourself or presented yourself as a victim to the world, just like Ukraine, just to mention another conflict that's currently happening.
I don't know, I
would like for a civil war to happen in the United States, because it will be a lot of fun to watch from afar. Just like, well, maybe not a lot of fun. Maybe that's a horrible way.
I think if a civil war is to break out in the United States, the entire world is going to feel that immediately. And our dollar, the value of the dollar is going to be impacted by that greatly. And so you're not standing to benefit from it. You'll probably be worse off from it than I would be out here.
I mean, it's already in the shit. It's already like, I'm already making like fucking $400 less than
last year. Man, today is a terrible day for the economy and for my crypto account. It sucks right now.
Yeah.
But anyway, all that to say, I can see something happening if Trump does win, because can you picture these Democrats just being like, all right, and we're going to do the White House tour like we did last time. And like Obama in 2016 was like a cordial, all right, we lost. Let's see how this goes. And it's tradition that the incumbent president will show the new president around the White House, and they'll have a sit down and they'll do pictures. Can you picture Joe Biden doing that after everything that's happened? I can't see that. They're going to fight that every step of the way. And it's going to be consistent hiccups on the way to Inauguration Day, if it happens. But it might not happen. They might just play their games again.
Do something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's already a video of this African-American gentleman that's saying, I can't breathe, as he's dying.
As he's strangling a police officer trying to get out of custody.
Yeah. So they're sharing that one. So they're starting on that side. And then there's also another thing that I saw the other day about some bovine flu, another one, you know, just to prepare yourself for another whatever.
Sounds delicious.
It's just like, okay, so you're testing the waters again, just because it's election year. Is it this year that's election year?
Yeah, dude, the clock is running down and it seems quiet and nice.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine it's going to stay like that for long.
When is it? When is the voting happening?
November.
Like November?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're recording this April 12th. It's the opening day for Civil War. May, June, July, August, September, October. We're 7 months out.
The last Christmas the United States will have? Yeah.
I don't know. It's really difficult to predict, and it makes me think that the least interesting result is bound to happen, which is Biden winning. Even though you see all these polls, and even the liberal skewing polls are saying Trump's up a point or two, which usually means he's up 10 points. And some of them are saying now he's got 54% to Biden, just rapid free fall. Also because of RFK running, he's taking points away. So I don't know. It's very hard to see what kind of a functional country we're going to be in if Trump does win again.
Would you like to commit of doing a B-Bang live stream?
On election day?
Voting night? Yeah, election day. Well,
no.
Night.
No, I don't want to do that. I watch the TV stressed and just like, just go, just minute by minute. I think I smoked like 8 cigarettes in a row in 2020, walking around the block.
Yeah, you'd just be drinking, just power, just like,
yeah,
our roles will be reversed. It would be just me here like, are you feeling all right there?
When I'm
throwing up and
stressed out, I don't talk at all. I just kind of I shut down. I'm very reserved. I would be horrible on camera or mic doing something like that, because I would just be watching it all play out. And I was up till like 7 in the morning last election day. So I saw when the vote suddenly changed at 4 in the morning. Yeah. I was like, what?
Were you like, oh, they're doing it, these fuckers?
I wasn't even thinking they're doing it. I was just like, what? Huh? What the fuck? Why is it? Okay, it's suddenly different now. I thought we were on track here. What was going on? And then the rest is history. Boy, what a different morning than the morning of 2016 that was in my household.
Well, that one you knew at night, right before you went to bed. I remember I was working overnight at Amazon and they announced it on the TVs and my coworkers were like, "Oh man, that sucks. He's gonna fuck all of us. And I was like, "Why? You're not going there. Like, you're already crossing the border. Like, what the fuck? Why would this affect you at all?" And it was better because the dollar like has never been higher. And now
Now, not so much.
It's just yeah, to the point where American companies here have started doing like adjustments with Costa Ricans where they either agree to pay you with the dollar rate that you were hired with. But the thing with that is that if it goes up, then you're kind of stuck into whatever it was, you know, like whenever you got hired. Or they might just like give us like a small bonus to pump it up to where it was before. So it is an issue that this guy is causing with all these conflicts and all this money printing that is it's fucking not just you guys but also us. And
It's fucking everybody.
there's also this thing about how there's like an epidemic in the States, right, where people are just moving back into their parents' house and your culture is like, well, you're 19 or 18,
Get
or you
going.
know, there's the door, goodbye. Yeah, so that's kind of funny, not funny in a haha, you guys suck, because that's how our culture is. We leave our parents' house when you get married, you know, that's how it's like here. But I don't know, it's kind of fucked up, and it's kind of thinking back as to what the like suburban middle class life was in movies in the 90s and early 2000s, and just thinking about how much America has changed from then to now, where everything is so kind of just desperate and sad now and like hopeless. And it hasn't really been like it's been during our lifetime, you know. So I don't know, it's kind of crazy that it's gotten to the point where, you know, something like a like things that would happen in like a Home Alone or like an Adam Sandler movie, you know, where people are just they have one job and it's a couple with two children and it's a two-story house and he's, you know, he sells cars and he's okay, he's not even great at it, but he's able to provide for his family. And now it's like, well, I have to fucking move back because the only job I can get is 7-Eleven and I can't afford shit, you know.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely a thing that's happening right now. The way that prices are just building and building and building to these higher rates is unsustainable. And again, we are printing so much money, it's devaluing the dollar. And these are not things that people think about. And it's not something that the vast majority of people care about or can even like fathom. You know, it's very difficult to wrap your head around it. And nobody is going to until they start feeling the price of it. I know so many people in my personal life that did not like Trump, that voted for Biden, that voted for Hillary, that for one reason or another, they rationalize, oh, we don't like Trump's tweets. Oh, he's a racist, whatever. No, that's all out the window. That doesn't matter anymore. When you're grocery, if you're going to buy groceries and it used to cost you $60 4 years ago, and now it's costing you $130, that's a real problem. And people can get on TV, they can say, oh, no, the economy is doing great. If everything's the exact same, oh, I'm sorry, you can't afford more of your treats. That fucking, I hate that Redditor argument. Oh, I'm sorry, you wanted to pay less for your treats with your delivery slaves. The fucking gay chapo people. Hate
Yes, I
them.
do. Why
Yeah.
wouldn't you? What's
Yeah.
the what? I don't understand that shaming. It's like, oh, what? You want to pay more for your shitty whatever? For
Yeah.
whatever
Yeah.
you want to buy? You want to pay $7 for a tea that's a bag with water? Like that's yeah, I don't understand.
But all that to say, so many of those people now, I've had like a bunch of Uber drivers telling me Trump has to win. Trump must win. I have to vote for Trump. Like Haitian, Arab, Latin, people who are like, yeah, he's racist, but he has to win. He really needs to win because their
Well,
pockets
because
are hurting.
yeah, at the end of the day, like if they're not watching TV or if they're not in social media with all of his shit, I guess his mean stuff gets exposed and amplified, then all you care about is how is your life getting affected by this? And if your life is being affected by this corpse that they have on presidency right now, negatively, it doesn't matter how nice the scripts that they give him are. At the end of the day, you have less money in your account, and if you're a what would you call them? A regular person, like a middle to lower class income person. You don't give a shit about what they people that you know say worse things than what Donald Trump says, and you drink with them and hang out with them. So you know what I mean?
Who,
So
me
like,
specifically? Yeah, probably.
no, I just mean, if you're a regular person, like you heard your friend say something, which is like, all right, dude, it was just like, okay, you're not gonna fucking cancel him and start hanging out with him, but. That doesn't matter as long as you're not in that bubble where the amplification of those things matter. Because that shouldn't matter. It doesn't. Why would it matter if my president is mean or not the nicest or embarrassing or whatever? If I'm making more money than ever, and if everything is cheaper and safer, and let him be a buffoon. Who cares? He's representing us. Is he? Why?
Well, I
He's
think
the
that's what
president of
people
your country.
are coming around to now. I think it's a combination of the economy and how rapidly things have changed in terms of spending habits. That, in conjunction with the mainstreaming of a lot of anti-Semitism over the Israel-Palestine conflict, has flipped a lot of the Jewish people that were very, no, Trump's a bad man. He's a bad, bad man. No. Well, now they changed their tune. Now they realize, oh, well, one's probably more in our favor than the other. So these two things, I think, have been radical game changers in the 4 years since Biden was elected. But to what you're saying, there are absolutely people out there that are just as simple as, well, Biden has a heart. Biden, he at least has a heart. I've heard people say this before. I was like, well, you don't have a brain, clearly. His fucking cognitive skills are that of like a 3-year-old child at this rate. He can memorize, he can read a teleprompter, great. He can't get off his stage, it seems like. But all this to say, it's unpredictable where things are going. I'm hopefully somewhere smooth and safe. And you would have to think if you're these co corporations who bent over backwards to strengthen and make our democracy safe. In 2020, where they ran an article in, what was it, People or Time, like breaking down how Facebook and Twitter and they all got together as the Avengers of the corporations and saved our democracy from Donald Trump. And like the shadow campaign of 2020, I think was the title of the article. In a mainstream press, Time, I think it was Time. Well, can they really afford to do that again? Because so many businesses, so many corporations are going out of business and they're hurting. They are hurting across the board. It doesn't really make sense. I mean, how much of a believer are you at the end of the day? I think that's what is going to be tested here in the 2024 election.
And could they get away with it too? Because they get away with it once.
They could. Yeah,
Yeah.
they could get away with it,
Well,
absolutely. I think people are aware of it, but nobody does anything. Nobody wants to do anything.
it's down to what the fuck are you gonna do about it? Nothing.
Yeah.
Complain about it on the internet for 4 more years and then
Yeah.
do it
You'll
anyway.
have thousands of tweets you can put on X for the next 4 years. That's about it. That's all you want to do if you're Jack Posobiec or whatever the fuck your name is.
Well, you know
No.
what you'll get? You'll get oh, we impeached him. And then, okay.
Cool. All right.
Just
President
exactly nothing
Kamala.
changed. Yeah,
You think that's
nothing
going to be
happened.
better?
Exactly. Exactly.
You
Nothing
really think
happened.
that's going
Nothing
to be.
changed. It's
Yeah.
like when they
So.
impeached Trump. Oh, you, hey guys, you did it. What did that
Twice.
accomplish? Fuck all. Nothing. Absolutely nothing other than, haha, were impeached. Great. Thanks a lot. That's abhorred so much to, what's hurting regular people.
Right. The Democrats want TikTok and X, or they used to want Twitter popularity, but there's not really an outlet for that in the same way now. The conservatives just they want to be left alone. They just don't bully us. Don't be too mean to us. So they don't do anything. And that's not a functional system. When you have politicians not acting like politicians and more concerned about public image and how it relates to their viability as a candidate, it's not going to work. And that's what we're seeing here. Everything is decomposing. And that's what inspired Alex Garland for this new movie, Civil War 2024, released today, April 12th, Friday, April 12th. He is a man from the UK. People have accused him of not understanding American politics or the system at all, but I think he does. I think he does more than they want to give him credit just because he aligned California and Texas to get around the most obvious of, you know, enemies here. What do you think was the strongest aspect of this movie? Jesse Plemons?
Yeah, maybe his cameo was funny, I guess. I was pretty bored, honestly.
I think it's, you know, it's a short movie. I think it's an hour and 49 minutes. The first 40 to 50 minutes goes by kind of slow. It's a it's a drag. Once you do get to that moment of intensity, and even though it starts with a suicide bombing with somebody who's wearing the American flag or something, that's ridiculous. Once you do get to the Jesse Plemons character in, I think it's in Charlottesville.
Yeah.
How on the nose can you get? When that moment happens with the two reporters from Hong Kong who, why would you lie about where you're from in that situation? So Jesse Plemons is essentially, he's an evil Proud Boy. And he goes, well, you've seen the meme probably if you're a listener of this show, because we have a very male online 23 to 27 year old audience. Get ready to pull up this Skibidi Toilet clip for our segment for this episode.
Sure.
Jesse Plemons plays a character without a name. He's got a gun. They're disposing of bodies. They are filling a hole full of corpses of not just deposing soldiers, but random people. And Kaylee Spenny's character, Jesse, hops into a car with one of the two Hong Kong reporters. They speed up. They get stopped. They get pulled over. Jesse Plemons and another soldier bring them over. And to save the day, you have Lee, who is the Kirsten Dunst character, Joel, who is the Latin reporter, and Stephen McKinley Henderson's character, Sammy, says, "No, thank you. I'm going to stay behind. I'm old and fat. This is clearly a bad move. They're going to kill us. See you later." He goes and waits in the car. And they go over, and Jesse Plemons is very suspicious of everybody here. He goes, "Oh, you're a journalist for Reuters? Cool. I hate journalists. Why wouldn't I hate journalists? I'm a right-wing guy. I know what journalists are. Worms. Maggots. You belong in the hole." So he starts asking, "Well, what kind of an American are you? Where are you from?" And Kirsten Dunst says she's from Colorado. Joel says, "I'm from Florida." Okay. Jesse says, "Missouri." And the weeping Hong Kong reporter doesn't lie. He says, "I'm from Hong Kong." And he gets a bullet. Now, if you're the Hong Kong reporter, and Jesse Plemons is pointing a gun in your face, where are you saying you're from, Hans?
San Francisco.
No, you'd still get the bullet. You'd be toast. Unfortunately,
well, isn't that what there's a lot of?
That's probably worse than Hong Francisco. Kong.
Oh, that's true, because it's a right winger. Oh, fuck.
You just said the gayest capital of America. You said Harvey.
I thought there was
Milk
a lot
country.
Of Asians there. Yeah. Asian people are good. I don't know. What would you say? So that he got, well, you couldn't lie about Southern if you don't have the accent, because then
sure
it will
you
kill
could.
You angrier. But am I going to say I'm from Alabama with this accent? Alabama? I just put it on. Bammer. I'm a Bammer boy. Yeah, I'm sure he would believe me. Name two things about fucking, I don't know. I can't even name a city. Alabama. I'm from the famous Alabama. Yeah, no, I'd be fucked. I'm Mexico, and then boom, just
yeah,
just
that's
like
the South, right?
Yeah,
Texas.
Yeah,
say Texas. You could say you could say Texas or Florida, excuse me, and that's pretty believable. So
yeah.
the Hong Kong
full-blooded. My mom was Indian. Yeah.
The Hong Kong reporters die. And then Stephen McKinley Henderson's character, Sammy, comes through, runs over Jesse Plemons, and gets shot. They escape. They make it to Washington, D.C., which is going through massive gunfire. The East Coast is just total, the farthest thing from a Cold War. It is hot, hot, hot. You have helicopters. You have tons of shootings. It's just pure terrorism around the clock. They get to the White House. The conclusion of this movie is really something, because I like it and I hate it at the same time, mm-hmm. for the same reason. And you have the three journalists tailing soldiers that are part of the New People's Army, which again is the Communist Army. And they look like a proper military. They're led by a black woman soldier. So this is the first mm-hmm. thing where I was like, I don't think it would really play out that way if they're raiding the White House. I don't think there was maybe correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think there was a black woman soldier storming into Bin Laden's million-dollar home, taking him out. I don't think that's what, if they did that, we never saw a body.
Yeah. So I don't remember Chris Kyle Nisha, right? Being the sniper that killed, wasn't that who killed Chris Kyle? Killed.
But, yeah, no? I think so.
Wasn't it?
I've been thinking about watching American Sniper. Clint Eastwood directed cool. that, and people always say, oh, that movie sucks. Why does that movie
suck?
You've
never seen it?
No.
I've never seen it.
No.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I bet it's pretty okay.
Yeah, I'm sure it's better than, you know, what 2016 Twitter people would tell you.
Right. Richard Jewell was great. So I don't know. It? Yeah. Yeah, it was really good.
Were you going to talk about how Kirsten Dunst gets killed in the dumbest way that you can get killed?
No. Okay. And I expected that to happen, because at the beginning of the movie, Kaylee Spenny's character goes, oh, if I got shot, would you take a photo of it? And she doesn't answer or whatever. And then, of course, you know they're going to do the reverse here, where she gets shot and she's taking the photo. And she's now the respected, elevated journalist that she's always wanted to be, because now she puts her work before humanity. And that's what it takes to be the best journalist. Everybody knows that. Ask anybody for BuzzFeed.
Yeah, I just kind of wish that it wasn't done so sloppily when it happened, because on that scene, she pushes the girl. What's her name? Kaylee?
Kaylee Spenny's character's name is Jesse.
Jesse. She pushes Jesse down so that she can be down and not get shot. And then she stands there on top, just like, so I'm saving you from being a target, and then I'm just becoming the whole target myself instead of going down. And I was like, why are you? What? Oh, because she has to take your picture as you die. That very okay. And I just hate when convenience makes characters look stupid in a way that they haven't been stupid throughout the movie, just so that we can have that scene, you know? Because what about her history of conflict photography will tell you that if you're pushing someone down so that they don't get shot, you should probably go down with them instead of just standing as a target like she did. So that didn't gel with me. That bothered me. That was another thing where I was just like, it's bothering my autism, the fact that she's so stupid and gets killed this way. Kill her. I don't mind if you kill the character. Just have her have, you know, the little common sense that she's had for the entire movie right at the end when we're supposed to give a shit about this scene, you know? And instead I'm just like, oh, fuck you, you're stupid, die, I don't give a shit, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of like, oh my God, so touching. It's just kind of like, oh, well, you did this yourself, stupid.
Yeah. I didn't think that these characters were warm enough for me as an audience member to care about any of them dying. I was hoping more of them would die. Also, I need to clear up something really quick. I've been saying it was the New People's Army that stormed the White House. And what they do is they kill the president. They do.
Oh, that's a little different.
It's not the New People's Army. It's the Western Forces. So it's the California and Texas Alliance, which I guess they'll go any which way. They're, you know, he's playing centrist here by doing it that way. But the visual of what you're doing reads clearly a certain way. You are putting a message forth. And this is probably the only movie I've seen that really frames it in a way of like, yeah, we got the president. First of all, the president would be in a bunker somewhere to what you were saying before. He wouldn't be hanging out in the White House with a couple of Secret Service members. That's not even close to how that would play out. Even with Hitler and all these world leaders who have died from losing the war and then killing themselves or dying, it never plays out that way. You wind up Saddam Hussein hiding in a hole for your life, basically. And then you get dragged out and they let you live and then the people handle you. They pull out President Ron Swanson. They drag him onto the ground. Joel says, hold on, I need a quote. He says, oh, don't let them kill me. And then he says, that'll do. Like, oh, now you're a badass after you spent the whole movie fucking crying, you loser. You loser character. And then they shoot the president, Ron Swanson, in the chest, and he's dead. And then who's the one who does it? Please tell me. Which soldier? Do you know which soldier?
The black woman.
It was the black woman.
Yep.
Okay. Now, I don't even want to have to think this way, but clearly if you're Alex Garland and you're, again, a cookie dough liberal, you know what that visual is, and you know exactly what you're doing. So,
what do you mean? I don't explain it. Explain it to me, because it's not clear enough, you know, for someone that doesn't really think about this type of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was like, all right, okay, we understand, we get it. Okay.
He thinks you know, I learned he did the Lex Fridman podcast, which seems like the most appropriate place for him to do a podcast. Same type of thinking. Both of these men, Alex Garland and Lex Fridman, just guys who think that they're deeper and smarter than they actually are, that they're good at one part of the process, and they think that means they have knowledge to the whole thing. And it's like, you really don't understand what subtlety is, do you? So
did you listen?
Fuck no. Come on. Would I listen? Would I listen to that? If I wanted to go to sleep, if I wanted to pass out in the middle of the day, yeah, I'd put it on my TV right now. That's the only way I'd ever click play on that.
Hey, Lex, go on movies.
Come he blocked me. I'm still blocked. Oh. I've been blocked for 3 or 4 years now because I posted that meme of who Lex Fridman thinks he is. And it was like him next to the, you know, thinking man statue. And then who Lex Fridman really is. And then I put a picture of NyQuil next to him. He didn't like that.
Oh, yeah, I remember
that. He blocked me.
Yeah, well, there's not like much of a debater if you ask
no.
me.
No. Anytime I've watched his podcast, he's just like so dumb. He's just clearly he's a very skilled whatever the hell he does. What is he, an engineer? What does he do? I don't know what he does. He bakes cakes for a living. But whatever he does, he's clearly talented and skilled at that, and he's just a fucking retard when it comes to anything other than that. And you can see that with any of his interviews. Very just simple thinker, Lex Fridman. And Alex Garland is a similar type of simpleton.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I've never listened to Lex. I think I've tried. And then I was just so monotone and so dull that I was just like, I can't. It's difficult for me to pay attention to a podcast when I'm listening to it, and especially when what they're talking about or the hosts are not interesting, because then it's just like, I'll just get distracted and 20 minutes will go by and then I'm like, oh, I don't even remember what the fuck I'm listening to anymore, you know? And when I did that with one of his episodes, I was like, yeah, this, it's kind of dull, kind of not very interesting, kind of just sitting there and very soft-spoken, and not for me.
I would be curious to see if that was, I don't know when it was conducted, but if it was conducted around the time he was doing this movie or working on this movie and what he has to say about it. But you can, he's put forth a lot of his opinions, political opinions in these interviews in the past. You know exactly where he's coming from. The movie reads a certain way. I'll give him credit for not hammering home the most obvious route to go about this type of film, but it's a flawed movie top to bottom, and there are problems with it that are totally unrelated. And the majority of the problems with it are unrelated to the politics of the movie or anything to do with reflecting reality. I just think Alex Garland is one of these guys who, he's not a bad screenwriter, but he's got a vision as a director, but he just can't seem to juice that enough in a way for it to be stimulating in any sort of meaningful way.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? Do you think he needs someone there to reel him back on some of his things and then push him towards other things? Because I think that's one of my issue with his movies, that it's like trying to push the envelope, but it doesn't go far enough. So then mm-hmm. he just stays in a boring middle that doesn't accomplish anything.
Yeah.
So instead of pushing the envelope and saying something, you just kind of like, eh. Which is how I felt when the movie ended. I was kind of like, cool, I just spent almost 2 hours on this. That's it. You know, didn't really leave any type of memorable impression. And mm-hmm. On the last episode, when we were talking about his movies, that's kind of how I felt about his other movies, where I don't really remember them. I saw them, but remember very little things.
You're nailing it. He is able to do something that's technically well made, but he doesn't push it far enough to add any sort of like effect for the viewer to walk away with. There's nothing that you're drawing from the movie aside from, well, I was just 90 minutes of my life. That was 2 hours mm-hmm. of my life, which if that's your purpose as a movie, I mean, okay, but it doesn't lend itself to being rewatchable or something to be commemorated or revisited, because you got everything on the first go. There's not going to be a whole lot for you to return to. And that's the problem here. It's the problem with Annihilation, with Ex Machina, with certainly with Men. Men is in the same tier as this one in terms of, like, you can read that from a mile away. You already know where this guy's coming from. His efforts as a screenwriter, where Danny Boyle directed his films, those have, you know, yielded better results. 28 mm-hmm. Days Later and Sunshine. And Sunshine is kind of a mess too, but it's an interesting mess. And I think Danny Boyle is four times the director that Alex Garland is. So, yeah, I think we're just kind of left with, you know, it could have been a big event movie, could have been a moment, and it's not. I think this is going to be a quiet thud, and then it's going to go away after a couple weeks in theaters.
How do you feel about my Don't Look Up comparison before we watched it?
I think it's a one-to-one comparison, but I think the effect is right. I think when Don't Look Up came out, it dropped on Netflix. There was a lot of talk around it. It was similar to what this movie is currently getting. And then as soon as it got out of the award season, nobody thought of the movie again. Mm-hmm. This won't even make it to award season. This is not going to be in the conversation for that. It's going to be forgotten before summertime. So the only thing that's going to live on from this movie is that Jesse Plemons meme. And that's going to be done in the next month. Sorry. I don't think there's any longevity to Civil War. And it's probably not. I mean, maybe it's really cool in IMAX. Maybe. But I don't think it's worth seeing.
Mm. No, it's another. Seems to be another one of those cases where the marketing made it look like it would be more interesting than what it was. And then you don't understand the outrage after you watch it, because then you're just like, why would anyone be upset by any of this? You know, it's very non-threatening, non-offensive. So then it's just kind of like, if I watched it or if I didn't watch it, I don't think it would have changed anything. You know, it's kind of like, all right, I guess the internet decided that this was going to be the movie that people were going to fight about. But I don't think anyone's going to fight about this movie, because it doesn't do anything to push anything anywhere. So mm-hmm. then it's just kind of, it exists, and then it's just going to disappear. And that's what you get with this type of movies now when they're so, whatever, generic, I guess. Or...
That's the purpose of this movie. I mean, I'll give them credit for doing something that was potentially risky or controversial and having a movie about an American Civil War come out during an election year when everyone, certainly on the Tim Pool side of things, is just constantly going on and on and on about Civil War. I think that's cool. But you kind of gave the, I mean, aside from that ending, I'll say that ending, to what I was saying before, I like and I hate the ending. I hate that the ending is clearly done with that warm-up purpose in mind, where he's probably thinking, like, we might have to do this. We might have to do this in 4 to 8 years. Be ready. Be ready to put a bullet in old Prezzo. I appreciate the balls of doing like a real solid concrete final ending. Like, you killed the president. I mean, that's as solid as it gets. That's the only way this mm-hmm. movie could end in any sort of satisfying fashion, probably. So hats off on that, but it's not a memorable movie. And I don't think it's worth paying $40 to go to the theater to see it. And it's probably not worth seeing when it goes to streaming even. I don't think it would make a good streaming movie.
No.
All right. I think we'll cap things on that note and keep it nice and tight. Somehow we managed to talk about the movie almost purely throughout the entire episode, aside from a quick 20-minute excursion on related topics, which were American politics. But Alex Garland, RIP, we'll miss you until you go make another movie. Apparently, he said he's quitting directing, but he's got a movie coming out with Charles Melton. He's shooting in a month. That's another war movie. So, fucking liar.
Yeah. I didn't care about him before. I didn't care about him after this movie. He didn't change my opinion on him. He's just kind of like, his movies are what you end up watching after you scroll through your streaming platform for half an hour. And he's kind of like, oh, right, Annihilation. I read that this was good. Let's play it, I guess. And that's how this movie is, too, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Or it will be like that once it hits those platforms, yeah.
Completely agree. All right, go sign up on patreon.com/lowres and join our $5 tier. We have an episode available right now on Dune Part 2 and Dune, the 2000 Sci-Fi Network Frank Herbert adaptation, which we talked about more than I thought we had when I went back and cleaned up the episode. I was like, damn, we spent like a whole 20 minutes talking about this Sci-Fi Channel Dune. So the title is now Frank Herbert's Dune and Dune Part 2. Go check that out in the $5 tier. Or if you want to have us cover a film of your choosing on an upcoming episode, join the $100 tier and select a movie for us to watch. And we'll talk about it. We'll analyze it. We'll get into it. Do that now. Do that today. And that's been movies for this week. Thank you for listening.